Last time we ended off speaking about the Chet of David HaMelech. He took Bathsheba. He orchestrated her husband Uriah to be killed at war because he was a Mered B'Malchus. He was a rebel against the king. Now, we spoke about how initially he figured that he was over an Avera and he was trying to cover it up by having Uriah come home and be intimate with his wife. That plan did not work. Then he went over to plan B, have Uriah killed at war. So it ended up, at the end of the day, that really everything was B'dar Cheter. Everything was done according to the letter of the law. Technically speaking. Because Uriah was killed at war. He gave her a get before he went out to war. That in case he dies, she's divorced before he leaves. So everything is all good.
What bothers me is, why is it more in B'Malchus if he tells her go live with your wife?
He told him no. You don't deny a direct order of the king. There's no such thing. The king tells you to do something, you do it. No questions asked.
My God, I don't understand that. I don't.
First of all, that wasn't the only thing.
It depends what he tells. If he tells you you have to go to Y and everything else, but something personal should be married with B'Malchus. Okay.
That was only one thing. Huh? Another thing that he's considered to be married with B'Malchus was because he addressed Yoav as his master in front of David HaMelech. He called Yoav Adoni.
That I can understand.
Adoni Yoav.
Okay.
That you understand more.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So at least one reason out of three. Makes sense.
Okay, I've been hearing this for 3 weeks already.
I got something else I want to ask you.
Okay, well, we'll get to it. So now David now thinks that since it all ended up B'dar Cheter, it all was done according to the letter of the law, there's really nothing wrong. So in his own eyes, he figured that he's a tzaddik. Maybe he's not such a great person, but again, he didn't go against halacha. So what happens is now, Kadosh Baruch Hu sends Nasan, a Navi, to David HaMelech. He doesn't tell him directly, oh, you're a horrible man, you're chayta, you sinned, you need to do tshuva. No, he doesn't do that. Because David does not realize, in his own eyes, he doesn't seem to be a rasha. So we'll see right now, he tells him this whole story of this poor person who didn't have much. He gets David HaMelech to himself to realize what he did. Through this story, he gives David the opportunity to pasken on the story, to say what the verdict is going to be with this man in the story. And according to that, Nelson explains, you are the same man. You did the same thing that this person had done. So let's begin.
He gives them a marshal, and then he says, who did that? You.
Right, exactly. Exactly. First, he wants David to pasken on the story. He wants David to say what the din is.
What he did.
Yeah. So let's see. Pasuk Aleph starts off. Veishlach Hashem es Nasan el David. Shem sends Nasan and Navi to David. Vayava Elav Vayimer Loi. He comes over to him and he says, Shnei Anashim Hoyu Beir Achas, Echad Asher VeEchad Rush. There are two men, one city. One of them was wealthy. One of them was poor. Lasher Yotzinu Bakar Harbim Oid. The wealthy man had plenty of cattle, plenty of sheep. Well, Arashin Kol. The poor man had nothing. Kim kifsa achas ktana, asher kana, this small little lamb that he bought. Vayachayav etigdal imay veimbanav yachdav. This is all referring to, every part of the story alludes to a different detail in the story of Uriah and Bathsheba. First, when he refers to the people in the same city, that the fact that they were in the same city makes the Avera even worse. The fact that they were in the same city and he didn't bring himself to do anything to help this poor person, makes it even worse. And when he addresses the fact that this was a young sheep, a small little sheep, that refers to Bathsheba, because Uriah took Bathsheba when she was a small little girl. He raised her together with his children. That's what it says. Right. He raised her with his sons, because he had sons from a different wife. And this little girl, Bathsheba, grew up together with his sons. When she was old enough, he ended up marrying her. Mipito itoicha, mikos itishta, she ate from his bread, she drank from his water. Vecheka tishka vatiloi kavas. She laid with him and she was like a daughter to him. This is all referring to Bathsheba with Uriah. Now, the Bible explains that the special unique connection that is now described over here in these psukim is what makes the chet of David so severe, so serious. So what happens next? Vayavai helech la'isha asher. A stray man, a helech, comes to this ish asher. Vayachma lakachas mitzayinai b'karai, lasas la'irech ha'balai. He refrains from taking from his own sheep to prepare a meal for this man, for this guest. Now, it's interesting to note that the pasuk begins to describe this guest as a helech, a stray man, meaning someone who's not so important, right? He's not important enough for me to go out and take from my own sheep. And then it describes him as an ireach, a guest, because he ended up taking from the poor guy's sheep, and he makes his whole fancy meal as if it's an important guest. And the Malbim also explains that this alludes to the way the Yetzer Hara works on a person. The beginning, the Yetzer Hara comes to him as a stray man. He just, you know, comes in and just like kind of on his way, kind of stops by. And then once he kind of gets an entrance, then he becomes a guest. He comes there a bit more often. So he comes once, right? And then once he gets an opening, he comes more often. Until finally he becomes a settler, he's part of the family. And that's the way the Yetzer Hara works. So what does he do? This wealthy man takes the sheep from this poor person, and he prepares it as a meal for this guest that came to him. David is very upset with this man. This man deserves to die. Now, we have to understand, what does that mean, this man deserves to die? What did he do? Okay, so he stole a sheep from a poor person. Terrible thing. But to say that he actually deserves to die? That's a bit harsh. No?
You gotta pay...
Well, that's his whole living, no? And that's his living. This little lamb, that's...
Okay, so you stole some money. You have to be killed for because you stole someone's possession.
No, but it's a possession that his whole life is based on.
Okay, so pay it back. Make him wealthy. Whatever. You have to be killed.
Right. Well, you gotta pay him back four times.
Okay, so pay him back four times. Pay him back 100 times.
Well,
do you want to kill someone because he stole some money? Okay, the guy's poor.
That's a good question.
Why is this Nathan talks the story? What is
So yeah, it's very important for Nathan to describe the story to David HaMelech because, again, David, in his own eyes, seems to be righteous. So Nathan wants to describe this whole story to David HaMelech. He wants David to go ahead and give the verdict on the story. And once David goes ahead and gives the verdict on this man and the story, then Nathan will tell him, okay, now this whole story applies to you. You went ahead and you passed down your own story, which is exactly what you did. So it's a way of getting him on his own to admit, meaning there's two approaches he could have taken. One approach was to rebuke him harshly, how dare you, it's a horrible thing, you did an avera, you have to do tshuva. That's one approach. Usually it's less successful. A more effective approach would be to bring someone on his own to get to the point where he would admit he did something wrong.
Is it an allegory or is it a parable? I don't know the difference.
Yeah, allegory. It's an allegory. Yeah. Huh? I think it's an allegory.
Yeah, it's a story that's similar, but it's not the... You're telling it in
a roundabout
way.
If you try to rebuke somebody in a harsh manner, it'll never work.
Right.
The guy will come back to you, who are you? You any right. better than me? Yeah, you did this.
Especially, it's the king.
Right, exactly.
It's not a way to get it.
Right, it doesn't work. That's why Nathan is doing it.
Sees anything wrong with himself.
And he'll, a person will realize through the story that, you know,
me,
he's right.
You.
And let him realize it the other way.
Right.
And then do nothing. Get out of here.
Right. Right.
This is important. This is first statement. Nathan came only because Hashem sent him. It means this is.
Yeah, Hashem sent Nathan.
This was his way to show how wrong he was.
Yes. Yes. So back to our question. Why does David say that this person deserves to die? So the Malbim Bavir explains that there's a difference between what's called Mishpat HaMelech, the ruling of the king, and Mishpat HaShoftim, the ruling of the judges. The ruling of the judges address each case according to the way you approach a civil rights case, right? This person stole money, okay, so he has to pay, like you said, four times, right? That's the regular simple approach to just a regular civil case, right? You stole money, okay, you pay back four times. However, the Mishpat HaMelech, the ruling of the kings, addresses not only the simple, dry, technical facts that took place, it addresses everything behind the scenes, meaning all the details that made this so much worse. The fact that he was so poor, that was the only sheep that he had, and this wealthy man had plenty of sheep. Not only did he not support the poor person, but he took from his own sheep to serve a stray man who wasn't even that important. They go all into the more into the so to speak emotional, psychological background details that affect this story, and that's what David is addressing over here. The cruelty of the action that this man did is considered to be so severe that he actually deserves to die. Again, he didn't do something that bad, he only stole some money. But the cruelty, the feelings, the sensitivity that a person should have is that severe.
You're saying it's a level of cruelty that's equivalent to a person killing somebody.
So to speak, yes.
Well, all the fear and love and war.
Down here he says here, he didn't make a judgment. He just got mad at the indignation rather than a judicial verdict.
Right.
It wasn't
you're saying it wasn't an actual verdict.
You right. should, but
right.
That's how it is. You know, you have Rachmanis, you have no Rachmanis.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So what David continues, and he says, Vesakifsa Yishalm al-Ba'atayim, he has to pay back the sheep four times. Ekef asher asa sadavar zev al asher lo yichamo, because he did this thing and he did not have any mercy on this poor person's sheep. Vayomer Nathan al David, Ata ha'ish, he tells him, you are the man that is described in the story. He's now going ahead and explaining to him why David himself should have been so much more sensitive, so much more careful not to be over this aveira with Bathsheba. First of all, he's telling him, I anointed you as king, meaning you are an honorable person. I put you in that position. I put you in that position of honor. So you should be so much more careful. Secondly, I saved you from the hand of Shaul. I did you so many favors, Hashem is telling David. So many favors. I've saved your life numerous times. That's another reason you should be so careful not to be over the Savera. You had such a shkacha pratis, just such divine providence. And you did not act accordingly. I gave you the house of your master, referring to Shaul. The wives of your master I gave to you. I gave you both your Shevet Yehuda, where you come from, and all the other Shvatim of Israel. It's interesting that this is the point where Hashem is telling him how many wives he's actually allowed to have. The Gemara in Sanhedrin learns out that from this pasuk that David was allowed to have 18 wives. How do we learn that?
666.
Right. At this point, he had six. Then he says, "V'isifacha, I will add to you kahena, like what, according to what you have now, meaning another six, v'chahena, and another six. 6 + 6 + 6 = 18.
What is 16?
Sorry, 18. So at this point, he had six, David HaMelech, right? And he's telling him, "V'isifacha, I will add for you kahena v'chahena, like this and like this." Meaning, like this, you have like the amount that you have now, meaning another six, and then he repeats it again, the chayina, and also another six.
How could he run the melicha? How could he run a country with so many wives?
Well, we have time to learn.
I mean, if you
it's hard to run a country with one wife.
If you think about it, you know, we're only allowed to have one now. You know, before they had.
Yeah,
but 1,000 years ago, they had two, three, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have 18, you know.
And the
I can keep you. Can keep your mind straight on anything.
I hear. Listen, I never had 18 wives, so I don't know what it's like.
Your wife is supposed to be your helpmate,
right?
Or if you're bad, she's going to be like
against
that.
You, right?
No, you have 18 of them. What do you what?
Well,
every day I'll be fighting with somebody.
Am I right or wrong?
When are you going to sit down and then learn?
I don't think we can understand it.
You can't understand
it. On a human level.
He's telling him, I gave it to you, so you should have it.
Well, obviously, David was a very righteous man, so she would be a helper to him, a helpmate, if he was just doing the right thing, acting the right way.
No wonder he died a young man. No, absolutely.
Well, you died at 70.
He's at 70 years. I'm just kidding.
One thing, though, when it comes later, one of his wives was, he got him in wartime. She was, whatchamacallit, and he didn't take her yet. Then he decided to have it, so then she converted. So, I mean, a man of his, he went to war. I mean, He should fall into that trap.
He's jealous.
He's looking for a beautiful woman. I mean, he's not an ordinary soldier. He's not an ordinary man. He's
right.
Can happen to anybody, I guess. That's why the Allah is there.
Yeah, it says that Leichat David Elakad El Haris Shiva L'Rabim. The only reason David really, so you have to understand what that means. But Chazal say the only reason David was actually committed in Avera is to show people how a person can possibly do tshuva. I mean, even after such a severe avera, it's still possible to do tshuva.
It also says that a person who says that David sinned is mistaken.
Right.
It didn't.
Right. Meaning, so again, technically David did not, again, we went through this, technically David did not do any avera. But over here, the way Nosson describes this to David, it seems like on his level he did do something wrong. And the reason why he's punished for it is to, so to speak, show people how a person can go through the process of tshuva.
But isn't that, I read something about Adam Rishon, what his mistake was. Mm-hmm. He says that if he figured out that the way he is, okay, but what if I sin and I have to do tshuva, They'll be better than that. But that's what you're saying he wanted to do.
No, he didn't want to do tshuva. No, I'm not saying that he planned to sin and then do tshuva.
He did it because to show you.
No, meaning it was orchestrated in this way to show the rest of the people, meaning Hashem did this. Hashem did this in order to show the rest of the people how to do tshuva. Not David. David didn't plan this. Oh, let me go do an avera, then I'll do tshuva to show everybody how it's done. No. Hashem orchestrated it in a way where it's going to be shown to people how to do tshuva.
Right.
Yeah. Pasuk Tes continues, "Madua bazisas dvar Hashem? Why did you humiliate the word of Hashem? Lasis harab einai, to do the bad thing in my eyes. Es Uriah chiti kisa becherev, ves ishtal kachtal chal isha. You killed Uriah with a sword, and you took his wife. Ois harakta becherev b'nei Amoy. Then you went ahead and killed him with a sword of b'nei Amoy." The Radak points out over here that Nosson is repeating himself. First he says, "Oisei kisa becherev," you killed him with a sword. And then it says, repeats, it says, "and you killed him with a sword of b'nei Amoy." Right? So he explains that he did two things wrong. The fact that he said, meaning, again, David did not go ahead and kill Uriah directly. He sent a message to Yoav to place Uriah on the front lines. And then he went ahead, that's how he was killed. So the Radak asks, why is David held accountable? We know there's a principle in the Torah, Ein shliach dvar avera. Meaning, if I tell you, go ahead and do an avera, right? Go ahead and say kill so and so, and you go ahead and you listen to me, right? Who's held accountable? You or me? You, right? Not me. Even though I sent you to do it, that you went because you went ahead and did it, you're held accountable. Why over here is David held accountable for the death of Uriah? He sent a message to Yoav to place him in the front lines. He didn't do it. He's the mshaleach. He's the initiator. He didn't actually go ahead and actively do it. Why is he punished for it? So, he explains, or Radak explains, that since he was a king, the word of a king is taken very seriously. And because he gave an order as a king to go ahead and kill Uriah, that's why Yoav, because he went ahead and listened to the king, he didn't want to go against the king, that's why David is held accountable. Just like Shaul, when Shaul went ahead and told Doeg Isha Adoimi to kill Noiv Yerkoyanim, even though Shaul didn't kill Noiv Yerkoyanim, it was Doeg who did it, but Shaul is held accountable because he's a king. The message of a king, the order of a king, is taken so seriously that the person who goes ahead and does it, is not held accountable, rather the king is. And even though, technically, you're not allowed to listen to the king in this kind of situation, it says in the Pasuk, "Kol yishasher yamer espicha yumos," right? Anyone who does not listen to what you say will be killed. The Gemara says, "Yachal afilu dvar avera." Maybe even for an avera, you also have to you still have to listen to the king. Tamloimar rak, meaning it says in the pasuk rak only, and that tells me that for a dvar avera, for any avera, you're not supposed to listen to the king.
Yeah, but just because he sent him, that doesn't mean he's going to get killed. He could fight. Did everybody there get killed? Nobody
yeah,
escaped?
Everyone.
None of us motherfuckers.
Yeah, everyone
I mean,
got killed.
I mean, you don't know.
You're right. It wasn't 100%.
Hashem could save him and he won't get killed. I mean,
it wasn't foolproof. You're right. But he placed him in a position.
Even though he sent him. He didn't pull the gun at
him. He placed him in a position where he did end up being killed.
Did you all know that the purpose of his purpose?
You think it's a good chance he might get killed. Probably.
Yeah.
99%. Yes. But he still didn't do it.
He
got killed.
Right.
Maybe he got so he was supposed to get killed. Because otherwise he wouldn't have got killed.
Right. No, clearly. Clearly. What were you saying?
No, I'm saying, did Yoav know that David's purpose was to have him killed?
Yeah. He told him clearly. He told Yoav clearly, I want you to make sure that he's going to be... I want you to place him in the front lines in order for him to get killed.
Is this his purpose to send him to die? Is this what only intention is?
This idea, he killed him, it
makes sense. Yeah. So what are you saying? Because this is nothing wrong to say he is responsible for, it's not directly, but at least he did everything to
right.
Was killed.
You have some responsibility.
Right. Yeah, he does
have
some
responsibility.
You
don't give someone orders and...
Responsibility is why he did it.
Right.
Of course,
why?
Probably
well, why?
That's what he's held accountable for. You did it so nobody would know what happened.
Right, also. He also did it to cover up. But it was also because he was a married b'machus. So legally, he was allowed to kill him.
No, probably it's not only William was killed in this.
We explained back in the previous paragraph that Yoav did not place anyone in a point of danger where they wouldn't have been killed otherwise. Meaning, there were no soldiers that were killed because of the orders of David HaMelech. It was a dangerous place. It was a dangerous spot. It was the area of
the archers.
Right. Well, it was the area where a group of soldiers from within the city would come out and attack. Yoav knew that this is exactly the spot where the soldiers from within the city would come and attack the soldiers of David HaMelech. He knew that. He knew that was the place. So he had to place soldiers there regardless in order to fight back. So it came out that no one died in vain. It wasn't like he had other people killed just in order to ensure the fact that Uriah would be killed. It would have happened regardless. It was inevitable. So back to what we asked, that's why he repeats it twice, to say you killed him, Cheref, right? You caused him to die, but you're also punished for sending this message to Yoav and having him killed by the enemies of the Jewish people, and you are, meaning it's repeating it twice to point out that that David HaMelech is held responsible, even though he didn't actually go ahead and do it, actively, but he's still held responsible, he's still accountable for it. Pasuk continues. Because you ended up killing Uriah with the sword of your enemies, now your enemies will be fighting your family forever. And we'll see later on how this klala, so to speak, took place. Kol yomar Hashem, inini mekem malecha ra mibisecha, lekachteis nashech leinecha v'nasati l'oriecha. I will go ahead and have an evildoer from within your household, and I will take your wives in broad daylight and give them to another man. Shachov in mashech leini Hashem shazayis. He will be intimate with your wives in front of everybody.
When did that happen?
This happened with Avshalom. When Avshalom was mired against his father, he rebelled against his father, David ended up escaping from the palace, leaving 12 pilakshim to watch over the palace. Avshalom, one of the first things that he did was he took over the palace, and he took these pilakshim, these concubines, he brought them to the roof of the palace, and he was intimate with them in front of everybody. Now, the Radak asks the obvious question. How could Nasan go ahead and predict that Avshalom is going to go ahead and be chayte, right, do something wrong, just in order to punish David? How do we know Avshalom is going to actually go, everyone has free will, right? How can Nasan say, yeah, Avshalom is going to go ahead and do that Avera in order to punish David? So he explains that if you notice, he does not mention Avshalom by name. Could have been anybody. Mm-hmm. Happened to be that Avshalom, because he was such a volatile, he went ahead and did it. Well, and he's going to be punished for it.
Free will away.
So what?
Whoever.
It could have been anybody.
Well, that person is losing his free will now, no? There's some being on planet Earth that's
evil out of their own house. Not everybody. Had to be some
meaning Avshalom. Meaning, if David did not deserve this, then Avshalom would have been chayte with somebody else's wife. So everyone, he has free will to be chayte, but it didn't have to happen in this way. It ended up happening in this way because it worked out perfectly for them to be punished through the taiva of Avshalom.
Right, but I'm saying, if he's prophesizing this, that means to say there's going to be some human being in the future that's going to take David HaMelech's wife and sin. So whoever that person is, his free will is taken away, no?
Well, I'm saying there are people that sin. It's not like a total chiddush. People sin all the time. It's not like
there must
it would never happen.
That's gonna sin.
Yeah.
I think it's too much Viagra. All these guys.
I don't know. Something else is going to bug me here. What are the fault of David's wives that they should get raped by him? Why is it because to punish David?
That's a good question.
What, how can you punish you through somebody else? Why should they suffer for what you did?
You're right, that's another question.
Maybe they didn't care so much.
I mean,
the Radak points out that
it comes out of, it's your punishment because, all right, you can understand what he came up against you and did all these things. But what, his wives must have been doing something wrong too for that to happen.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, listen, it's hard to understand the full picture why he had to be used for his avera to punish that guy. It's hard to put it, piece it all together.
It's possible that they weren't raped. Could be that they agreed to it.
Possible.
And could be that the punishment was the fact that they saw in Avshalom the replacement of David HaMelech. And that's why they agreed.
That's true. The Radak points out that it wasn't a major avera for Avshalom, because the halacha is that Mefusas Av, what's called a woman that was, so to speak, seduced by the father. And again, these were women that were of Eishes Sifas Tayar, that were, so to speak, seduced. No, they weren't married to David. They were his concubines. And it's called Mefusa Sa'av. The halachic term is someone who's, so to speak, seduced by the father, meaning he didn't marry her fully as a wife. She is Mutaras Laban. She's allowed to get married to the son, even though generally a wife of the father is not allowed to marry the son. Mefusa Sa'av, in this case, since they weren't fully married to him, they were allowed to marry the son. The only reason Avshalom actually did an aver over here was because they belonged to the king. They were so to speak, concubines of the king.
Can you go back to him then, afterwards?
If it was against their will, yes.
But they're still alive?
Yeah, no, you didn't kill them. You didn't kill them. Yeah.
This whole thing is very,
it
very
says
complex. We don't understand.
Were they the concubines, or were they his real wives?
His daughters, and
you know, there was the
Yehuda with
some people had concubines that weren't their wife. I mean, these 18, were they his real wives?
No,
he didn't do it freely.
No.
So how many were his real wives?
Real wives, he had 18. He had 18 wives that he was married to.
Right.
Then he had Pilakshim, he had concubines that he was not married
plus
to.
Plus that.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about the 18 wives.
No,
we're talking
no.
About
it's
just,
too, it's just
right.
I think it's really just all too complicated.
Right.
So what is it normal?
Mentality.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think
does that make sense?
He'd go after the wives once he show. All right. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Pasuk Yud Beis continues. Ki ata asisa v'seser v'ani eses adavar zel neged kol Yisrael v'neged Hashemesh. He's punishing him in a very severe way because you did this in hiding. I'm going to go ahead and punish you in public, in front of everybody. Meaning, no, it is fair because you tried to hide it.
Oh, I am going to.
Meaning,
gonna
because
reveal.
You tried that was goof of part of the avera. Mm. Part of the avera was that you tried to hide it. You tried to cover it up so no one would know.
No.
Because you tried to cover that up, oh, now I'm going to go ahead and punish you for that and do punish you publicly. And that's why Avshalom was intimate in front of everybody.
So did he do tshuva or did he not do tshuva? You're saying he did tshuva, he's
that was part of the tshuva.
Some,
yeah, I'm saying you still have to be punished for what you've done.
Surim right there.
The Rabbah also mentions that part of the Einish was that four of his sons ended up dying. Who are the four sons? This son that came from Bathsheba. From this story of Shalom, Amnon, which we're going to get to, his oldest son, and Adonia. Four of these sons ended up dying because of the Chet of David Melech. Again, it's not like they were completely righteous people and they didn't deserve to die. The only reason they died was because David did an avera. They deserved to die, but again, it was orchestrated in a way where David was punished. And they ended up dying in his lifetime. Pasuk in Gimel. Vayomer David el Nasan, Chatasi LaHashem. Right away on the spot, David admits and he says, I made a mistake. I did an avera. This is the big difference between David and Shaul. What does Shaul say when Shmuel confronts him? What did he tell him? No, listen, it wasn't me. It was the people. They wanted to keep the sheep for Karbonis, right? Comes up with excuses, with stories. David could have easily said, listen, technically I didn't do anything wrong. I don't know what you want from my life, right? He was a married b'malchus. She turned out to be a grusha. She was divorced from her husband. You know, he was killed. Nobody knew. What do you want? What are you getting all bent out of shape? You know, I'm not such a horrible person. He could have easily said that. But no. Chatasi l'Hashem. He admits right there on the spot and he says, I made an avera. Did an avera. That's the first stage in tshuva. Akara b'chet. Recognizing that you had done something wrong. Because he admitted, even though David went ahead and he came up with the verdict in the story that Nassan told him, he said, oh, the person deserves to die. So Nassan said, even though you said the person deserves to die, you are not going to end up dying because of this avera. Again, because you admit it. However, part of your punishment is that the son that you had from this whole story is going to die.
What's Niathis Avi
Hashem? Did he die in childbirth, or did he live?
No, we're gonna see right now.
Not on Kirul. All time was direct connection to Hashem. How immediately he made decision to.
Is this in the right order? That's the next question.
Okay.
When does Nassan come to him after the baby is born and he tells him this? Or the child also.
We're going to see. We're going to see right now. We're going to see right now. It's gonna happen right
pregnant.
Now.
We know she's pregnant.
Right, right.
Bathsheba.
What's in the after?
After Hashem means that the Ma'arikra explains that. Now, the Umas Olam, the nations of the world, have a Pischon Peh, so to speak. They have an opening to say, oh, you see this Mashiach Hashem, this anointed king that Hashem appointed, he goes out and he acts in such a way. Right? Yeah. So you're, so to speak, disgracing the word of Hashem. Arkady, what were you saying before?
No, but they talk with Nassan. And Nassan, immediately after saying, he said, I'm guilty, he immediately said, because of that, your sin is erased. Because Hashem made decision. How he contacted
this Hashem. How did it happen?
This is immediately, I believe he, based for his saying, he immediately said what Hashem want to say.
Maybe he knew it ahead of time.
What's the meaning of the atzta?
You disgraced. You disgraced.
You disgraced. Here he says
you disgraced or you cursed
enemies of your Lord.
Yes.
I mean, how can you?
Again,
this is something he did bad. I mean,
right. But this is an opening to.
You disgraced yourself to the enemies, I can understand.
Right, meaning, now the enemies have an opening to say, oh, this is how the king acts.
That's what it means. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
When he says that the English isn't right.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to see the other commentators. Pazik Tesva, Ve'ach Nassan al Beisal, Nassan goes back home. The man, the boy that's born to Bathsheba gets sick, and again, it's not clear at what point Nassan came to him when Bathsheba gave birth, but right after she gave birth, this boy gets sick.
Why does he still call him the wife of Uriah? He's not his wife anymore.
Maybe it's coming to hint that it's because he took Uriah's wife. That's
I
why.
Mean,
Uriah's
exactly. dead, and he was allowed to have her, and he got married, and everything right. else. Why does it say the pasuk Uriah's wife? You could say it's his wife because it's his child. It wasn't Uriah's child,
right? Yeah, it's referring to this, referring to that. Referring to the
Uriah loved David. What
I think
he says Uriah. It's not Uriah's life anymore. I mean,
right, but again, it's referring to the Avera that he did.
The reason for that, that he says Uriah's wife. He should say, your wife.
I think the problem being that if he sent Uriah back and he had relations with Bathsheba, later on, the baby that would be born could marry his sister. This was the whole...
Right. But again, the Malbim addressed that, and he said that David could have kept it to himself, who this boy is. When he grows up, tell him, listen, you're really my son, your mother is Bathsheba. And he could have told him that we would be able to know who to marry.
He's saying it because when she became pregnant, still Uriah's wife.
He could only have one wife.
He wasn't dead yet.
Huh?
Rabbeinu Gershom.
Right. No retroactive get yet because he wasn't dead yet.
Made this ruling because.
Right. So he's still telling him.
There's a lot of pogroms.
Wow. And when he first took her.
More than one wife, and wife runs this way, and the kids run that way.
She was pregnant.
Kids got together, and you got a.
That's why he got the whole thing, and one thing people to find out all of what happens. That's why he said it. That's why he said it was Uriah's wife. She still was at that point.
Rabbi Beryl Wein.
That's why it doesn't say
was one of the things your wife said. It was other reasons, child. But
mm-hmm. The child wasn't born yet, but it was conceived while she was still married.
I think one of the main reasons,
right?
They, you know,
right, that's true.
Fascinating.
There's got to be a reason for these words in here.
Yeah. There's always a reason. Okay, gentlemen, I have to stop here. I need to go at this point, but we'll continue from here next week.
Okay. The only thing I got.